Well, good morning. For those of you that I know there's a few new people here, so just a little bit of background. I've been given a few talks here on related to the Bible and science. And as a young person, I always wanted to be involved in science, but I was also a believer. And my challenge I gave myself was to say, if God is who he says he is, then what we see must match what he says. And in all my studies over the years and the lectures I've done, I've always searched for that and tried to present the evidence for the truth of God's word. All of my lectures are on my website. You can see it there. My name and then messages after that, and then you can see the messages for this year are in 2023, and the two messages that I've given already are on my website. You can listen to them there. You can also listen to them on the church website. But if you want to download the PowerPoint slides and the notes that I have with it, just go to my website and download them there as well. So this morning, I'm going to speak on the topic of our privileged planet. Some of you may have seen this video already, The Privileged Planet, a very interesting and unique DVD which shows that the Earth clearly was designed for mankind. God has created us in his image, and he made a place for us to live. And you'll see how unique it is as we step through that. So let me just start. What I'm going to cover is just a few summary slides of the last 2 weeks on chance, necessity, design, and how to tell if something is designed, our location in space, the laws of science and the Bible, a mathematical probability. And then I'm going to spend most of the time on the anthropic principle, which I'll explain, the universal physical parameters that we see in nature, and Earth physical parameters as well. So I'll be talking about not just the unique attributes of our planet, but also the fact that the moon is located on our planet and also is very important for life on Earth. And third, the whole universe, where the Earth is in our galaxy is very important because it allows us to investigate other objects in the universe. And I'm going to talk a little bit about, the search for other planets. And it's as if people have not found enough intelligence on Earth. They want to search for other planets, see if maybe there's more intelligent people. Well, I'll tell you what, the odds are very low. And then finally summarize the Earth as our privileged planet. So just to remind you, remember last time I discussed this issue of everything that we see here can be, you can describe the cause of that in three ways. Either it came here by chance, it came because there's a law of there's a law of nature which makes it happen that way. For example, if I put my foot in the chair and lean over, I'm going down always. The law of gravity is fixed and it's always the same. And if it's not described by one of those, not caused by one of those, it is a design. There's a designer behind it. Design, the table here, for example, just didn't happen because all the elements that are necessary for the table were in one place and just came together. Somebody designed it and somebody built it. And the same thing is when we look at nature, we see design in nature. There's a intelligent mind behind that. When we talk about origins, there's three different ways. We talk about creation. God created the universe and all life according to its kinds. And of course, we see that in Genesis chapter 1. Second, the alternate view is we came here through evolution. And that is called macroevolution. In other words, all living beings, they adapt to their environment. We call that microevolution. But microevolution cannot evolve into macroevolution. In other words, from one kind into another kind, Mac Revolution, there's no evidence for that. So they refer to that sometimes as molecules to man, or through the goo to the zoo to you. You know, some people put it that way too. And other ways, particles to people, none of that is possible. And Darwin would say, well, it happens because mutations, there's natural selection, and through that natural selection, we see different, diverse living beings in this universe. Well, we can show from science that's not possible. And then common descent. In other words, everything starts from one living cell. And then from that, we see diverse living beings, and we know that's not possible by science. In fact, last week we talked about the origin of first life, and we concluded that the only way that life can come about is through a supernatural being, and that being God. Nature has no way of explaining it. Then the third idea that has come up a lot, and there's a lot to do with intelligent design. There's a group in Seattle called the Discovery Institute, and they promote intelligent design as opposed to evolution. We promote creation versus evolution because the Bible teaches creation, but we also believe that there's an intelligent designer. So we have a lot in common with the folks that do intelligent design studies. So, and again, last time we discussed what if we see information in anywhere here, whether it's a written word or the information in our DNA, it requires an intelligent designer. And I introduced the concepts of irreducible complexity and specified complexity. I'll come back to that as we go. How do we tell if something is designed? Well, first of all, there's the notion of irreducible complexity, and I like to use the example of a mousetrap here. You know, a mousetrap has five parts to it. If I remove any one of those parts, it's not going to catch any mice. Zero. And so the point is that all the parts need to be there. And also, last week we saw that there are machines, you know, in our body, molecular machines in our cells. You can't feel them moving, but they're there. There are millions of them in our bodies. And the bacteria flagellum was just one example of that. And I can show the you know, a picture there, rotary motor. That is actually in our cells as well, just like the motors we see in our industry. The second notion is specified complexity. In other words, if something is very complex and specified, for example, a sentence, an English sentence, you know, has words, it has a verb, it has a purpose, that sentence. If I can write that sentence and communicate that to you, that's specified complexity. If I put down a random number of letters or words together, and it doesn't make in a sentence, it doesn't mean anything to you and doesn't mean anything to me. So, and information, as we saw last week, demands intelligence. Design inference. This is, how do we determine if something is designed? Our experience tells us that all man-made information systems and complex machines that we build have an intelligent origin. You know, the motors that you see, the cars that you see, somebody designed them. There's an intelligent designer behind that. And in terms of life, we can now see our DNA, which is information. You know, Darwin can be excused because he knew nothing about this information, the concept of information. And so he came up with the theory of evolution because he believed that life was just consists of blobs which somehow reproduced. He had no idea how. And now we know how they reproduce, you know, through the DNA. So biological systems also require an intelligent designer. So here's the three concepts that you need to be aware of. Biological information, that's in our DNA. You can see a picture of the DNA on the right there. Irreducible complexity, in other words, all the parts need to be there. And the specified complexity means if you have some information, you need to be able to send it as well as receive it. Okay, and I gave these as examples for those of you that weren't here last week. If I look at the top left sketch there, you see that it's a cave wall with some scratches on it. How do the scratches come there? Did they come there by chance? Was there a natural law which requires that? Or did somebody do that, the designer? And some you could say, well, maybe the rocks fell down the wall of the cave and it left scratches. Well, that could be a possible explanation. But if you look at the one below it, you see another cave wall where you have pictures of animals, horse heads and cows and pigs and all that. Did that happen by chance? No. Is there a law of nature? No. It's a designer. Somebody put those pictures on that wall. So if those simple things require a design and designer, how can you explain the human genome, which consists of 3 billion base pairs? How could that happen by chance? It can't. And the same thing with our cell, which is, we have 75 trillion plus or minus cells in our bodies. All of them are very complex. You can see just the picture of one of them. They're very complex. Even one cell we saw last week, you can't form that by chance. It doesn't. A natural law doesn't explain it. So the only thing that explains it is a designer. Somebody designed that. So people see that and ask the question, well, evolutionists see that too. They see the same evidence that we do. How do they explain it? Well, here's three examples. Even if all the data point to an intelligent designer, such a hypothesis is excluded from science because it's not naturalistic. So they can't explain it, but they say, well, it's not science. And Dawkins, a famous atheist and biologist, biology is a study of complicated things that have the appearance have been designed for a purpose. Well, I'll tell you, it was designed for a purpose. And the third, even Francis Crick, the co-discoverer of DNA, he said, biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was designed, was not designed, but rather evolved. So they have a preconceived belief in evolution. They won't consider the evidence for the other explanations. So now we come to looking at the Earth, its characteristics, and where it is in space. As you know, the Sun is the center of our solar systems, and we have 8 planets revolving around the solar system at different distances away. And of course, the Earth, as you know, is number 3 from the Sun, and you see the Moon there as well. And so you'll see some kind of dots there that, like the one is the asteroid belt. Those kinds of things, their asteroids come from there, but they also, those belts, they protect us from radiation that is in the universe. You know, we are protected there. So first of all, what makes our sun unique? You know, life on Earth depends on the sun, you know. Life only appears on the Earth. It doesn't appear anywhere on those other 7 planets. So the sun, there's gravitation force at work. So it holds our solar system together. You know, if there was no gravity, of course, you'd have the sun, and then all the other ones would just, there's no nothing keeping them in their circular orbit. The sun is our source of energy and light for life on Earth. The sun itself generates a magnetic field that envelopes all planets in our solar system. And the magnetic field is very important because it protects us, again, from radiation from outer space. The sun's heliosphere, helio being sun, and a sphere, acts as a giant shield protecting planets from galactic cosmic radiation, which comes from all directions. And if we didn't have that heliosphere, the sun's magnetic field, you know, we would be in deep trouble. We couldn't have life on Earth without that. The sun emits precise range of color, making photosynthesis possible. By range of color, I mean different frequencies, and only certain frequencies make photosynthesis possible. And so the sun emits a range of those colors that make photosynthesis possible. Without photosynthesis, of course, we couldn't have life. And then the other thing, Earth is in the Goldilocks zone of the sun. What does that mean? That means it's in a very special place. If it were closer to the sun, it could not support life because it would be too hot to survive. If it were further away, it would be too cold. You know, so it's in the Goldilocks zone. We could be just a little bit closer, a little bit further away, but it would be very uncomfortable. And we are right where we need to be to support life. The sun's size, it is huge. It in fact contains, I think, about 99% of all the mass in the solar system. The planets are small relative to the solar system, and the sun, the size also has something to do with the tidal waves on Earth. We have tidal waves in the ocean, and the sun is important for that. If it was smaller, we wouldn't have the tidal waves wouldn't be as large, wouldn't be as effective. And of course, the moon plays a role in that as well. And that's why it's very important that we have that moon, or else we wouldn't have those tidal waves and we wouldn't be able to clean, the ocean and the mass on the Earth. So let me just step back a bit on some facts about astronomy. Astronomy is a science dealing with the study of the sun, the moon, the planets, and all the stars, and the galaxies and the super galaxies in the system. That's what astronomy is all about. A solar system is just, we're just one star. As I said last week, we have, or I guess it was 2 weeks ago, there are about 100 million galaxies in the universe, 100 billion, sorry. And also, each galaxy has about 100 billion stars, plus or minus. So a very, very large number. So we're just one star. So we have a very unique sun, which is designed to be able to support life. And on the side there, you see some images of galaxies. We are in the Milky Way galaxy, the top one there. And the other one is the Andromeda galaxy. They're both spiral galaxies. So stars form galaxies. Galaxies can form clusters. So those are the large numbers. So the solar system is part of the Milky Way, the one on the top. It's a spiral galaxy which keeps rotating in itself, and the sun moves within that galaxy. And then we have the Andromeda, which is our closest galaxy, about 2 million light years away. And then closest star is even, it's closer, but it's still a long way away. So we have galaxies in the universe. And I like to use this always because the galaxies are very... this is a picture from the latest JWST. It's a new telescope system which is 1 million miles outside of our planet. So it's a million miles away from our Earth, but of course we can control it, from Earth. And the reason why it's out so far, because then you're not in the middle of all the noise in our solar system. You're way outside of the solar system there. So it's in a place where you can observe distant galaxies. And the evolutionists, of course, they're looking... They're using this galaxy because they want to look at the so-called beginning of the Big Bang. If the Big Bang theory was correct, you would want to find young galaxies at the beginning of the Big Bang, soon after the Big Bang. Well, what they're finding mature galaxies, not very young galaxies. So that gives the Big Bang is a real problem. The sun our solar system is in a spiral galaxy, and you can see a bigger upfront picture here. And where we are in that the Milky Way galaxy, and we are in that the spot there. If I can show you here, the sun, and notice that we are the sun and the planets orbiting around the sun is between two spiral arms. And that's very important because we're away from some of the noise, and so we are in a desired location where we can observe things in the rest of the universe, not just in our in the solar system and in our galaxy, but we can see further because there's we're in a preferred position there. So then I think I covered this before, but for the new folks here, I want to say, you know, the laws of science, we have many laws of science, and are they fixed? Does the Bible support that? And if you look at it, you're starting at Genesis 1, you have God spoke all the living beings into existence by creating their kinds, different kinds, you know, the cat, the dog, the cow, what have you, are all different kinds, and they all reproduce according to their kind. You know, they're not, and a kind is not the same as a species. So they all move, you know, they all reproduce within their own species, their own kind. So you got different species of dogs and different species of cats. Some are better than others, but that is what it is, and but they don't evolve into another kind. That's what's important. So the law of biogenesis says life only comes from life, and that is obviously true. That Genesis confirms that as well. And then the first law of thermodynamics, conservation of mass and energy. Well, Genesis 2 verses 1 to 3, when God says he created everything, complete, it's done, nothing more is created, so we have constant energy. That's consistent. The second law of thermodynamics, increased entropy, that is the loss of usable energy, that's what entropy means. And so entropy, the second law of entropy, things are running down. I mean, we're losing the energy that was there at the beginning. And that's also consistent with the fact, you know, God created at the beginning, and then everything's running down. If evolution was true, it's got to go the other way around, because to get from simple living beings to more complex, you have to increase the order. So things move in a direction from order to chaos, and that second law of thermodynamics is consistent with that. It also confirms, by the way, the fact that the universe does have a beginning. Because if the universe existed always and we had everything running down, we'd have no usable energy left. So we know it was created at some point in the past. The law of cause and effect. Every effect must have a cause. That's what that law states. And the effect cannot be greater in size or in kind than the cause. And of course, Genesis 1, verse 1, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God was the cause, nothing else. And that very verse, as we discussed previously, you know, refutes evolution, refutes atheism. You know, God, it doesn't try to prove that God exists, it assumes God exists. And we take the Bible as God's word. So then I'm going to get into some laws of nature. I'm not going to go into details on this. And you note the verse down below there, Jeremiah 33:25. You'll see that God created the laws. They're fixed laws. The law of gravity is fixed. And in fact, if the laws weren't fixed, you couldn't do science. So everything in the universe is bound by laws. And that Jeremiah 33:25 confirms that. So physics, chemistry, math, life, logic, universal constants, planetary motion, You know, and these laws, in fact, were discovered by scientists over the years, and as we covered in the last few talks, most of these disciplines of science were discovered by Bible-believing science. Consequence of laws of nature? Well, laws require, again, a lawgiver. If there is a moral law, somebody, and we believe that God is that moral lawgiver of our life here. The laws of nature are consistent with creation. And the laws of nature, in fact, make science possible. If the laws of nature were not fixed, we couldn't do science. Laws of logic. Transcendent truths. You know, there are objective truths. You know, today people would say, what is true for you is not true for me. You know, relative laws. But no, we know that there are fixed laws of nature. And in fact, science couldn't be done if they weren't fixed. There's a law of non-contradiction. You know, A and not A cannot be contradicted. So they are contradictions at the same time and in the same relationship. I just use my wife as an example. I'll say, well, my wife is in the room, and is that true? That's A. Not A. Well, if 5 minutes later she's out of the room, then not A is true. But it has to be at the same time in the same relationship. God cannot contradict himself. Makes reasoning possible. God is logical. He created us after his image, in his image, and it reflects on God's nature. Man created in God's image instinctively knows the laws of logic. It's built into us. In fact, atheists, they have to use these laws, you know, these laws that God put in place. So they have to use the laws of nature just to do science. So, and there's no way that an atheist or any secular believer can account for the existence of these laws. The first two laws of thermodynamics, we're going to go into a little bit more detail here. The constant energy, you know, energy remains the same. It can go, energy can go into mass, you know, Einstein's law, E equal to mc squared, and it can go back. Mass can go into energy as well, but the total cannot change. The entropy of a system increases over time. In other words, usable energy in our system, in our world, decreases over time. There are also other constant laws. You'll cover some of these. Law of gravity, conservation of momentum, conservation of electrical charge. Did natural laws evolve like everything else that Darwin said? Everything evolves. But there is no evidence of this. These are fixed laws of nature. They're the same throughout the whole universe. A little bit more on the second law of thermodynamics, because that confirms creation and not evolution. And you know, there's energy can be in many different forms: chemical energy, heat energy, mechanical energy, electrical energy. They can you know, transmit from one to the other. The second law says increasing entropy, unavailable energy. You know, there's less and less energy we can use. So everything goes from order to disorder. And you'll see on the right there, you know, evolution requires that we go from disorder to order. Because if we started with a big bang, you know, explosion, you don't get order out of that. You get confusion, you get disorder. And so evolutionists would say, well, you start with a big bang in the picture there, and you have simple elements like hydrogen and helium, and then everything keeps on evolving to all the other elements, and then eventually we can have evolution occur. Well, that requires disorder to order, and simple to complex, and that's not what we see in the world. So we see order goes to disorder, less available energy over time, and increased randomness over time. So some would say, well, I can explain it in other ways, you know, because if you look at living beings, you know, there's increased complexity in living matter. I mean, we are very complex beings. Increased organized complexity in living matter, how does that work? Well, we have an open system. We have a supply of energy, and that comes from the sun. That's our only source of energy. But then there's a mechanism for storing and converting that incoming energy that makes things become more complex and makes life possible. And there's a program or information to direct that growth in organized complexity. And you can see that in living beings. In the case of plant photosynthesis, I mean, the sun comes down and shines on the plant, and it uses that energy is stored in the plant. And then the energy converts it into proteins. And how does it do that? There must be a program in the DNA in the plant. That's the only way that can happen. A seed, you know, how does that become a plant? Well, there's a seed with DNA in it, and there's information in that defines exactly how that seed can grow. And then third is animal metabolism. You know, energy, you know, comes in, and that comprises the diet. I mean, we digest food, and that allows our bodies to grow. And there's a program to control how that happens, obviously. Because if it was a random, you know, we couldn't live. There's got to be order in a way that happens. Okay, I mentioned the other day the Christianity and modern science. Modern science originated in Christianity, a belief system that supports the scientific method. You know, the scientific method where you come up with a hypothesis, you run an experiment, and you check the results. And if you can do that repeatedly, then it becomes a law, and that's the scientific method. And that is supported in the Christian science disciplines. I'm just going to mention two scientists here that I mentioned before. Isaac Newton, he's probably the most well-known and highest regarded scientist in the past 300 or 400 years. He's the one that came up with the Newton's laws of motion, which you see there. I know you probably don't remember some of those from school, but they're still laws, they're fixed laws. Isaac Newton said, "This most beautiful system of sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and powerful being." And of course, that is God. Another one, Johannes Kepler, astronomer. He said, "The chief aim of all investigations of the external world should be to discover the rational order that has been imposed on us by God." In other words, he was thinking God's thought after him. He assumed that God is who he says he was in his word, and that he created everything, but he didn't, and the Bible doesn't tell us exactly how all that was done. So they were doing the research investigation to determine how God did that. That's their motivation, thinking God's thoughts after him. Some of you may remember that. I mean, that's the periodic table of elements. But here's an example, you know, and this wasn't invented till 1869. And you can see there the colors there. There's structure in this periodic table. Why is that? If it came randomly, I mean, you wouldn't expect this kind of a structure. In fact, science has tried to discover this structure in the 1700s and early 1800s, and they just couldn't come up with it. So here we have Dmitry Mendeleev, actually a Russian scientist living in the 1800s, and he finally came up with the correct structure of the periodic table of elements, starting all the way from simple ones, you know, the top left there, the hydrogen, and, you know, to the right, the helium. And you'll notice on the right, you got the column of helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, and radius. You know, those are all inert gases. You know, that's where the brown comes from. I don't know if you can see that in the bottom one there. These are noble gases. And on the far left, you got all the alkali metals on the far left in the gray, and the green, the alkaline earth metals, and so on. So there is structure in there. Why is there a structure? How could there be structure if there's not a designer behind that? And this is by Dmitry Mendeleev. Just for point of interest, he happens to be the 14th child of a large family. We know any family like that. So smart, very smart man, obviously, and they dedicated, they put up a bust for him to remember that, and that's a Russian scientist. With probability, I mean, when things happen by chance, there's a probability that they can happen. And then here, just so you all remember from last time here, if I have a head, a coin, and I can flip it, it comes up head or tails, and the chance of coming up heads is just one in two, and so on. You go down the list, and if you're trying to throw 10,000 heads in a row, good luck. You won't get there during your lifetime. And that is, one in the probability, one in the 10 to the power of 300. And we know there's a law of probability, mathematical probability says anything less than 1 in 10 to the 50th is mathematically impossible. And some of the things we looked at last week about the origin of life, we see that that is just totally impossible, because even the first, even a cell, probability of 1 in 10 to the power 40,000 can't happen. So now we come to the anthropic principle, which states that the universe appears to be carefully designed for the well-being of mankind. And, you know, of course, we know that there's structure in things that are unseen in the atom. You know, we can see those today, the elements, and measure that. But in the early days of science, you could not see that. So the evidence of, atoms which consist of neutrons, protons, and electrons. And what we don't know or wouldn't have known is that the mass of proton has to be exactly what it is, or else matter wouldn't hang together. The same thing with gravitational force and electrical charges. Let me just go to that. Second, I'll get back to that. And the other thing I want to point out is, you remember probably not too many of you have seen a total solar eclipse, between the sun and the earth with the moon in between. How is that possible? Unless it's designed to do that. There are more than 100 precise universal constants. There are a list of those. I'm not going to go through all that here. And we also will note that there are other planets in our solar system, like this Saturn and Jupiter, who are there for a reason, to protect us from radiation in space. And without that, we couldn't have life on Earth. Mass of a proton, chosen for stability. The mass of free neutron is slightly heavier than that of a proton and decays into a proton, electron, and antineutrino. And I'm not going to belabor that, but the mass of the proton, if it were increased just by 0.2%, it would decay into a neutron, positron, and neutrino, and we couldn't have life on Earth. This is an indication of precise design. And the gravitational force, same kind of thing. The gravitational force we now know is inversely proportional to the square of the separation distance between two masses that attract each other. This fundamental force holds the universe together, controls the orbits of all members of our planetary system. And if you look at that, force is equal to gravitational constant times the mass of one times the mass of the second body divided by the distance squared, 2.0000. If it were 1.99 or 2.01, our system wouldn't exist, and we would not have life on Earth. more evidence of a design. Strength of electrical force, electrical charges, same kind of thing. It turns out it's also proportional to 1 over r squared, q being the electrical charge, and then r squared being the distance. Also exactly 2.000, exactly 2.0. So it reflects God's purposeful planning. So a total eclipse, and that only happens very infrequently and can only be observed in certain parts of Earth at certain times. And that is the light from the sun being obstructed by the moon so that there's an area on Earth where you would have no light. So the sun is completely obscured by the moon, visible from a narrow track on the surface of the Earth. And how can that happen? Well, it's possible because the sun's distance from Earth is 400 times the distance that the moon is from the Earth, and the sun's diameter is 400 times the moon's diameter. So when it comes in just the right place, you have a total eclipse, and can't see the light going there, the light rays, they've got those lines there. The physicists have done measures on that to determine whether the Einstein's laws in physics were correct, and that confirmed his projection of what they were, because mass bends light, and so how much it bends it could be measured because we can have a total eclipse. Otherwise, we have no way of determining that. So we believe total eclipse by design. And that's what it'll look like, but don't look at it when it's happening. So universal fine-tuned parameters. There are more than 35 parameters which must be exactly what they were. I just give you the example of three. And these facts, the universe displays what has been referred to as a fine-tuning. And that all these parameters are exactly what they need to be. You know, the four forces of nature, gravity, electromagnetic, strong and weak nuclear forces, they're exactly what they need to be to hold everything together. Other interesting facts, the distance from the sun. I mentioned, you know, we're in a Goldilocks zone. We have to be a certain distance. If we're too much further away, you know, it'd be too cold. The size of the bodies is exactly what they need to be. The actual tilt, the rotation speed, you know, it takes 24 hours. If it took more time, it would be too cold on the other side to support life. And if it was too fast, it would be too hot. So it's exactly what it needs to be. And the moon's position, that causes tides in the Earth, so it keeps the oceans clean with those tides. And then the stability of Saturn and Jupiter. Some other unique attributes. Our Earth is known to have plate tectonics, and this is very necessary for supporting of life. There's a strong magnetic field to deflect harmful radiation. It is tilted at 23.4 degrees for optimal seasons. If it wasn't tilted, you'd have a very dull life. It would always be cold or always too hot. And so 70% of Earth is covered with water. Water is an essential for life. None of the other planets have anything like that. In fact, water can't be because it's either too cold or it's too hot. So we are right in the right place. The atmospheric pressure is just right. So the law of gravity is just right. The percentage of oxygen is just right, 20-21%. If it was lower, again, we couldn't support life. And so again, all of these things are exactly what they should be. And we can have diverse living organisms. Moon's at the right distance, support it. Here's just a look at the tilt, exactly 23.5 degrees. And that is required for the seasons. And again, very important. More critical Earth constants. There are more than 122 very narrowly defined constants. I mentioned the oxygen level, Earth's position in the solar system, in the galaxy, and in the universe is very important. Earth's magnetic field, the thickness of the crust, it controls the release of oxygen into the atmosphere. Earth's size, rotation, tilt, rotation of the Earth controls temperature differences. Tilt, probability of all these constants being exactly right is 1 in 10 to the power of 138, and mathematically, you know, that's impossible. Can't happen by chance. These two, large gaseous planets, they have regular orbits, and they serve a purpose of protecting us from comets. And it draws comets by its large gravity, so it doesn't come to hit the Earth. Throws comets out of the solar system. Jupiter's role acts as a comet, an asteroid magnet, shielding Earth from catastrophic collisions. And you can see there again, at the bottom right, here's our sun, our solar system. You're right in the middle. Between two spiral arms of the galaxy. Okay, so again, very special place. It needs to be there. So then just a little bit about, what about other planets? Can't there be life in the universe on other planets? Can't there be other planets out there that could support life? Well, if you look at the number of parameters that need to be exactly as they are on Earth here in order to support life. Just look at some of these numbers. How many planets are there? Well, they've determined that there's probably just one, maybe one planet per galaxy. Remember, there's 10 to the 11th, 100 billion galaxies out there, and 100 billion stars in each galaxy, roughly. Even if you just assume there's one planet per star that might be able to support life, therefore the 10 to the 22 planets in the universe, if you multiply that, then there's other here with 53, but this is the more interesting, 128, because we have more than 128 finely tuned parameters. You multiply those numbers, the probability together, 10 to the power of minus 166 times 10 to the 22, you get a zero followed by 144 0.1. Not going to happen. It's impossible. And so far, scientists have not discovered any planets that are anywhere close to instant like Earth that could support life. So far they have identified maybe 500 planets that they think might be able to support life. That's a very small number, but it is growing. But so far none of the parameters are anywhere close to what they need to be. So the planets are either too large, too close to their star, or erratic behavior. Have the probabilities changed? No. The more planets they find, the less probable it is. Here's what some scientists have to say. A lot of these are atheists. He said, as we survey all the evidence, the thought insistently arises that some supernatural agency must be involved. Is it possible that suddenly, without intending to, we have stumbled upon scientific proof of the existence of a supreme being? So these are atheists asking that question. Was it God who stepped in and so providentially crafted the cosmos for our benefit? Yes. How surprising is that the laws of nature, initial conditions of the universe, should allow for the existence of beings who could observe it? Life as we know it would be impossible if any one of those hundreds of physical constants that I mentioned were different. We just wouldn't have life. This is a Professor Steven Weinberg, a well-known physicist. And again, they recognize this. It's impossible that they could happen. This could happen by chance. Another, Fred Hoyle, well-known astronomer, common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics, as well as with chemistry and biology, to make life possible. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to be so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question. So how do evolutionists deal with this? Well, they're unable to deal with such permanent properties of nature. Properties of nature are constant throughout time, and all those physical constants, they're not changing. The laws of nature are not changing. And so evolutionists have no way of explaining this. Max Planck, another well-known physicist, Nobel Prize winner, founder of modern physics, stated, according to everything taught by the exact sciences about the immense realm of nature, a certain order prevails, one independent of the human mind. This order can be formulated in terms of purposeful activity. There's evidence of an intelligent order of the universe to which both man and nature are subservient. In other words, there's design in what we see here on Earth. There is a designer, and that is God. So Earth is our privileged planet. The anthropic principle, confirms that. What we find in science confirms what is written in God's word. There are more than 100, actually probably more than 200 unique physical constants. There's a video called The Privileged Planet, which some of you may have seen. But what the conclusions of those scientists are, two things. The Earth is uniquely placed in the universe to sustain complex life, and it's uniquely situated so we can observe the rest of the universe. So we can find out a lot about what God did by observing the universe, and scientists are moving beyond the Hubble telescope that we had in early 1900s to the mid-1900s, and now they had this new one, which is a million miles out to get out of all the noise and observing things that we could never observe before. And all of that supports creation, not the Big Bang picture which you see on the bottom there. There's another video, the Privileged Planet, but there's another one just came out from Discovery Institute called Privileged Species. In other words, it focuses on why we are privileged on this planet in particular. So some people will say that, well, all the parameters are such that if there were multiple universes out there, we're not the only universe. Scientists conjecture, well, maybe there's multiple universes out there, and each universe has different set of properties. Well, for that is totally conjecture, because there's no way to confirm that. Now, we can't measure any other universes at all, and that just it's a wild conjecture in my view. There's a well-known used to be an atheist, Anthony Flew. He wrote a book, There Is No God. And then he maintained that position for 50 years, and then towards the end of his life, he saw so much evidence of design on the earth and in the universe. He said, there's got to be a designer. There's got to be a divine mind behind that. So he came to faith. I'm not sure he accepted Christ as a savior, but he recognized that God does exist. And so whether there's a multiverse or not, we still have to come to terms with the origin of the laws of nature, and the one viable explanation is the divine mind. I mentioned there are two different videos. I think one of these may be in your library, if you haven't seen it yet, The Privileged Planet, and the other one is a shorter one. I know The Privileged Planet can be found online, too, on YouTube. This second one, I'm not sure. It may also be. So with that, I'm going to bring it to a close, and just with these verses here, which most of you know already, from Genesis and Psalms and Isaiah. Isaiah, where we are created in God's image, and we have a mind, and we can reason using the logic that God provided us. So anyway, that's it. A lot of information, I know. But if you want to watch again, maybe in a few days, it'll be up on the church website. Next week, I'm going to be talking on do we have a climate crisis? And some of the things I say will probably raise some flags. And I'm not sure if we can put that up on the church website. I have it up there. I do have recordings of that previous renditions of that on YouTube, but they put a warning on there. If you want the truth, go to this government site here. But anyway, we have the truth. Yeah. Father, come to you just to thank you for what you have given us. We thank you for your sending your son and for the salvation that we have through him. We thank you for the earth that you've given us to live on, and we thank you for the logic that you have given us, the reason that you have given us, so we can observe nature, we can study nature, and we can see that it confirms what you have written in your word, and we just thank you for that. We just pray that people will use what they have learned here to share it with their family members, colleagues, whatever, and to share with them this information that we have that is the truth as well. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.